Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Real Prepper Solutions here at freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio. I am Andy Russ, also known as Deacon John here on the station. And, of course, everyone's excited this evening because everyone's known for the past week. We have a very special guest with us this evening, Mr. John Moore. How are you, John?
Real good. Good to be with you, Andy.
Great. Wonderful. And we also have on the call, we've got Nighthawk, the station owner, Ghost Walker, a survivalist and a prepper expert, and also Acid. And folks, give me a minute here to introduce John. John Moore, of course, of Republic Broadcasting, the John Moore Show. And you might want to check his website out. He's got a great website. That's thelibertyman.com. And John's been a speaker and trainer since 1986, famous radio talk show host on Republic Broadcasting. He's been a private investigator, homicide detective since 1973, homicide detective in the state of Missouri for 8 years, decorated Vietnam veteran, flew 57 combat missions, bodyguard assignments, author of numerous articles on personal security, and, of course, of internet fame. His famous CD compilation he put together, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. So, John, I've been listening to your radio program for several months, almost a year, and I was kind of startled you had some new information in the past week, and I was wondering if you wanted to go ahead and speak about that and anything else that's on your mind as far as your research.
Well, sure. Thank you, Andy. In fact, you play a part in this also because you ended up being a source yourself. It'll be, it was Tuesday the 17th. No, it was Tuesday the 10th, excuse me. Time flies. Tuesday the 10th of July, a private trusted contact told me about a conversation he overheard between a person who's a spouse of a member of the, someone who works for the Department of Defense, and this person attended a briefing for spouses, for dependents. Now, the spouse works for the Department of Defense and is part of what we call continuity of government contingency planning, which out of all the people in the Department of Defense, both civilians and military, maybe 1 or 2% at the most of people that work for the Department of Defense. Anyway, before the briefing started, the spouse had to sign a non-disclose agreement, and then the briefing began, and they started telling this person about Nibiru, Planet X, and how there's going to be, right in the not-too-distant future, massive flooding of the East Coast, and that the spouses and the families would be getting maybe as much as 2 weeks' notice, maybe not, before they'd be evacuated and allowed to bring with them one carry-on item, one suitcase, and abandon all their other private property. Now, during the briefing, Andy, they were shown a map very similar, I've been told, to my map on my DVD, that I worked with three Navy veterans to recreate the map showing North America with new coastlines and all coastal areas, Pacific, Atlantic, and Gulf Coast, being inundated with water, 50 to 100 miles inland, depending on where you are. So that was one source, and I continue to stay in touch with my source and hope to get an alert when the evacuation order goes out. You played a role in this, Andy, yourself, in that you have a confidential source with the Department of Homeland Security.
That's correct.
You want to tell us about that? You want to tell
us
about your source?
Absolutely, John. And, you know, I've been politically active. I'm from Columbus, Ohio, involved with the Tea Party and such, and I've met a lot of gentlemen, retired law enforcement, retired military, retired lettered agency folk, and I'm going to call these people a group of people, so I want to keep my sources confidential also. And being an attorney, I understand, you know, confidentiality of attorney-client relationship, that type of thing. So I understand John's concern with his confidentiality of sources also. But a series of fellows that I've met and worked with over the years in the Tea Party, of course, working for limited constitutional government freedom, that type of thing. They have sources that are still in touch with those inside the government. And what my sources told me confirms the existence of Planet X/Nibiru that the government has known about this for some time and that they've been preparing for this with continuity of government over the decades, and they've been sharpening their knife, so to speak, over the past several years. And from what I'm hearing, there are three different major strains of thought within the government. They have three main scientists. One fellow is sort of a doom and gloom type of theorist. After doing the research, his report says there's nothing you can do. Forget about it. You better get right with God and start praying. Another scientist said they believe this thing will be coming in sometime in the fall of 2012. And another one thinks 13/14. So, but they're not quite sure what I'm hearing of when this thing's going to get here or exactly what it's going to do. But most importantly, my sources, independently of yours, of course they don't know each other, confirmed what you reported on your radio show.
Right. Well, let's move on to other sources. The gentleman who comes on Republic Broadcasting after me Monday through Friday, Mr. Mike Harris, he has two sources. One of them he's a government insider. This person gave two specific dates, August 17th for the 10th planet to be making its closest passage going into the solar system around the sun, and September 26th as the date when it makes its closest passage going back out into the solar system, out into space. Now, these dates have been reported other places. This is the first time I've had and Mike's source, he'll go this far, he'll say his source is a high-ranking member of a foreign intelligence agency. This is the first time I've had these dates backed up by a private source that is known and trusted to somebody I know and trust, which gives it a lot more strength, of course. In addition, Mike Harris has a second source who basically confirmed, not the date, but confirmed what you just said, Andy, that the 10th planet is real, that the government knows about it, and they're preparing to deal with it. In fact, I know for a fact that they've been preparing to deal with it since 1979. They discovered this thing, or I should say they located it and been tracking it since 1979 with the Pioneer 10 space probe. So they being the federal government, have spent tens of millions, hundreds of millions of our tax dollars preparing these deep underground bunkers. The insiders, by the way, call them hotels, just for your information. And they're engineered to withstand a certain level of earthquake. Obviously, they'll be wind resistant because they'll be underground. And they're fully stocked with freeze-dried food, hot and cold running water, gymnasiums, hot tubs, movies, basketball courts, everything you'd ever want to be comfortable and cozy underground for possibly years at a time. All at our expense, of course. Now, I agree with what you're saying. There are different opinions from different scientists. One of the problems the scientists have, and I've become very good friends with Professor James McCanning. Jim is he's the most prominent credentialed scientist who's gone public with this information. And since he's not connected to any government grants, universities, or payrolls, he can tell the truth. When an object like this comes into our solar system, it starts behaving like a comet. And as it gets closer to and farther from certain planetary-sized objects, it speeds up and slows down, which has given difficulty to the scientists as to the timing and where it's going to be and when it's going to be there. So that's one of the problems they have, is this speeding up and slowing down of this object. And it's not just one object, by the way. According to Dr. Harrington, who was the supervising astronomer of the United States Naval Observatory, the 10th planet is four to five times the size of Earth, with a far larger iron and nickel core. Now, that larger iron nickel core gives it a lot more bang for its buck in terms of effect on gravity and electromagnetic electrical effect. Professor McCanny has a term he uses called action at a distance. You may wonder what that is and how it works. Well, here's a simple way to make your own observation. Now, Andy, our moon is a rock about one-tenth the size of Earth, about 250,000 miles away. Every 12 hours, That small rock, a quarter million miles away, makes all the oceans go up, and the next 12 hours, it makes all the oceans go down. That's action at a distance. And that's exactly the kind of force that we're talking about, although the 10th planet is dramatically larger than our moon. The 10th planet could be a million miles away or more and have a dramatic impact on the rotation of our Earth, possibly a pole shift on Earth. There's many secondary effects, including the quarter million mile debris field that travels with the 10th planet, a debris field of rocks, rocks the size of Cadillacs, rocks the size of Rhode Island. And I found out, Andy, that in the county I live in Crawford County, Missouri, I found out there's a 13-mile diameter meteor crater in my county. I started doing some research, and I found there's a string of these craters almost in a straight line. Most of us have heard of the meteor crater in Arizona. It was an old Route 66 tourist attraction forever. Going from the southwest towards the northeast, a string of these massive and possibly not so massive craters. You know, I've been to Meteor Crater. I was 13 years old on a family vacation, and I was impressed. That thing's a mile across, and they've got a full-size dump truck at the bottom of it. It looks like a tinker toy. Now, that's only 1 mile across. Can you imagine a meteor crater 13 miles across, Russ?
Yes, that would be definitely something to experience.
Can you imagine seeing something like that, obviously from a safe distance? What would a safe distance be? My goodness. Hopefully a really safe distance when that thing hit. I mean, it would be the equivalent of the power of, I'm sure, a good-sized nuclear weapon. Point being, we're getting the word out. You and I, Andy, you've confirmed the existence of the 10th planet through your private trusted sources. I've been confirming it through my private trusted sources for a number of years now. What I really bring to the table is debriefing these Navy veterans. Now, I've backtracked to 1979, when one of the first briefings was given to flag rank officers in the Navy in New Orleans. One of my listeners, he ordered a copy of my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. He watched it. He calls me up. He says, John, I've seen your map. I said, really? He says, yeah, I've seen your map. He goes on to tell me that it was 1979. He's about a 25-year-old sailor down in New Orleans. And he gets the orders to set up a briefing room for a weekend briefing for these admirals, flag rank officers. And he says, John, admirals don't do weekend briefings. But they show up and they're smoking cigars, slapping each other on the back. They all have known each other for their entire adult lives, telling jokes, inquiring about each other's wives and children. And they go into the briefing room. Now, my listener saw the map in the briefing room, but he was not allowed in the briefing room. He set up the tables, chairs, sound system, lights, and so forth. He said when the admirals came out of the briefing, they all looked like their puppy dogs had died at Andy. They had just got one of the first briefings ever. That was back in 1979. Now, I've debriefed about two dozen of these Navy veterans who were actually in briefings, the earliest of which for these veterans I've debriefed goes back to 85. All of them, with one or two exceptions, all of them were veterans of the Navy Submarine Corps. Now, the Navy Submarine Corps is a very unique part of the Navy and part of the service in general. A lot of people don't know this, Andy, but the least intelligent man, until they start letting women on, the least intelligent man on these submarines has 120 IQ. And they go up
there.
Yeah, that's the lowest IQ allowed. Yeah, they have very tough diagnostic testing. They're looking for two things. Very bright men who are very psychologically stable. If you're going to be in a tin box for 6 months at a time and not see daylight, you better have a very strong psychological profile.
That's correct.
Now, beyond that, they don't wear the uniform the rest of the Navy wears. They got their own uniforms. They don't associate with, talk to, or hang out with any other part of the Navy, for the most part. They're almost a service unto themselves. And being so insular, even the top officers in the Submarine Corps, they have a tradition of taking care of their own. Now, the culture and the environment of being on board a submarine, whether it's diesel, electric, or nuclear, means you're absolutely, there's no ifs, ands, or buts, you're absolutely dependent on each other for your lives, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Because you screw up on a submarine, everybody dies. So that's the nature of the submarine corps. They take care of their own. Once the admirals found out about this, the Navy submarine admirals, then they decided, they took it upon themselves to brief their people. And here's what they were told in the briefings. Gentlemen, during your lifetimes, not your children's, not your grandchildren's, during your lifetimes, these oceans are going to slosh out of their basins, flooding all coastal areas worldwide. The Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean, Gulf of Mexico. And when you retire, you just might want to consider relocating one of the two known safe areas, one of which is the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks, where I happen to live, the other being the border of Wyoming and Montana, which I think they were saying that before they found out Yellowstone was a supervolcano. But
yeah, that's correct.
It's far too close to a supervolcano to suit me. So it was kind of how this all came together. I was having lunch with a friend of mine I served with in the military. He retired from the Navy. I'm talking about the Planet X, and he starts talking about this briefing that he received. And it wasn't until that evening I'm having dinner, and it's later in the day, and it occurred to me, the light bulb lit up. Oh, my goodness, we were both talking about the same thing. So I made an appointment to get back together with him ASAP, and that's when he agreed to help me start recreating the map that he was shown in that briefing. The next veteran was at a college lecture I was giving. We were co-presenters at a college class on geopolitical matters, talking about terrorism. And we did our presentation to the college students. We went to a pizza place in Rolla, Missouri. And we're sitting there, myself across from this veteran who was not a Navy veteran. He was a veteran of another service and did a 3-year tour of duty in the Navy Submarine Corps. His wife sat next to me, and my friend, a college professor, sat at the table also. Once I found out he did a 3-year tour of duty with the Submarine Corps, I had to ask the question. I never met this man before, may not ever see him again. This is my one and my one and only chance. So I look him straight in the eye, and I said, tell me what you know about rising ocean levels. Before he can speak up, Andy, his wife speaks up. She says, John, we're at the Pentagon. It's our last duty assignment. We're getting ready to retire. We've lived all over the planet. We need to find a place to retire. Mm-hmm. We picked the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks because of rising ocean levels.
Well, there's your answer then.
Absolutely. So I made an appointment to meet with him the following week and have lunch, and he agreed to make further revisions on the map that I was creating. The third veteran was one of my pistol students. I teach concealed carry training, and that's where I've met most of these veterans. At lunch, and I've made a habit to do this, at lunch I ask all the people present if they're veterans. When he said he was a retired officer from the Navy Submarine Corps, I immediately made an appointment to have lunch with him at the local country club the following week. We get together for lunch, and I ask him the question. He says, he looks me straight in the eye. He says, John, I just retired 3 years ago. I signed a 5-year non-disclose agreement. If I tell you what I know, I could lose my pension. Mm-hmm. I look at him and I say, well, he's now deceased. Steve, he had cancer, and way too many of these guys get cancer, by the way, serving in the submarines. I said, Steve, can you blink your eyes once for yes and twice for no when I ask you questions? Then you won't be talking. He smiled and giggled a little bit, just like you did, Andy, just now. And we went ahead and had a conversation. And he helped me make the third and final revisions on the map that's on my DVD, Global War, the government isn't telling you. Fast forward a year. My DVD is the first disc is done. It's being produced. It's September 2008. And I'm at a fundraiser. I'm also a homicide detective for a client of mine charged with murder. It's being sponsored by the Western Cherokee Nation. And there's music and there's good food and a lot of people and everybody's enjoying themselves. And I see a gentleman walking around and he's got a real official looking ID tag on. It says, Tim Spencer, Director of Emergency Preparedness, Western Cherokee Nation. So I introduced myself, and we're talking, and I said, I got a DVD I'd like you to watch. Would you agree to watch it and get back with me? He says, sure, John, I'll watch it. So Tim Spencer takes it, and he calls me up a week later. He says, John, I watched your DVD, and I've seen your map before. I said, really? He says, yeah. I'm a Navy submarine veteran, and I saw your map.
Oh, my God.
Now, Tim Spencer is a very unique guy. He doesn't have a pension that can be taken from him. And I'll tell you a little story. He goes through submarine school. He gets assigned to his first submarine with two other young men. And they report for duty. And they're told when they arrive at their submarine for going aboard this ship that there's no bunk space for these guys, that they're going to set up hammocks. They're going to tie up their hammocks between the warheads for the Polaris nuclear missiles. Don't worry, gentlemen, there's no radiation, you'll be fine. Well, it turned out they weren't fine. It turned out that 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, they were being radiated. So Tim Spencer doesn't have a pension, and he's got 100% disability from devastating radiation poisoning that has dramatically changed his life and almost killed him. So he agreed to go public with me. Mm-hmm. He does not have a pension he can lose. Tim agreed to go public, and he appears with me, and I interview him on my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. He was one of the missing links that I've been looking for several years, because there's nothing like a live eyewitness to give veracity and give credibility to what you're trying to put across, is there, Andy?
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's been a quest. I've learned, and I've, it's kind of ironic. My initial major when I first, very devastating semester in college, the fall of 1966, I wrote down as an 18-year-old, I wanted to be a journalism major. It turns out I've become an investigative reporter. I'm conducting investigations, looking into these matters, and I'm reporting what I find. So by on-the-job training, I have, by definition, become an investigative reporter. By definition, Russ, you are also. You know, when you interview somebody like you do, and you report findings of your interview, that's what you are, by definition, an investigative reporter.
Right.
Did you? Or hadn't thought about it?
Well, you know, I'm just trying to get the truth out here. I mean, I had been researching this for a year or two, and for me, it was kind of New World Order stuff and wondering what the government's doing, why they've taken our constitutional liberties. And then I listened to got a hold of your DVD series, and I started to put the two together. And I think that an argument can be made that the geopolitical changes, the police state, a lot of the wars, that type of thing. I think the elites are scrambling and trying to. They're competing for the natural resources. They're crashing the world economy. They're stuffing as much in their pockets, so to speak, as they can before this astronomical event. So I've also looked at, you know, the NDAA, all the executive orders that Obama has issued, that type of thing, and, you know, UN Agenda 21, that type of thing. I think what all that stuff is, if you put it together, is after the event, I think what they're going to try to do is come forth and say, oh, don't worry, we're going to pick up the pieces now. We've got all this stuff set in stone. We've got all the laws. We've got the UN. What's your opinion on that, John?
I think you're spot on there, Randy. Andy, I've reached the same conclusion. And the ultimate goal of what they want to accomplish is literally written in stone. It's called the Georgia Guidestones. How many billion people on this planet? 6.5, something like that?
Right, 6.5,
Their intention is to have 500 million, 500 million people inhabiting this earth when they're done. And you're absolutely right. They've got limited time. The weather event, as it's sometimes called, the weather event will shut them down just like it will shut everything else down.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got limited time to put in place all the pieces on the chessboard so that when this weather event is over, they can come out and have their shiny new world order ready to go and impose their will on the rest of us barefoot peasants that managed to struggle up out of the mud and live through this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Right. And I also wanted to bring the station owner, Mike, in. Mike, you've got an independent source or sources that you wanted to tell John about, didn't you?
Yeah, I have three. I got one who works for Lockheed. Another one works for, I can't say. And another person, former HLS. One's moved his family currently over to the East Coast, but they're getting ready to go to Denver with his specific unit that he's working with.
Okay. It's employment related, yeah.
Right. And then the other one's the same way. They've moved their family again, same place in Connecticut. They're getting ready to pack off and head over to Denver. And then there's the third guy who works in a specific area of government who's also tracking multiple. They're tracking multiple things going on in like a bang, 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 bang scenario where we got a complete distraction with terrorist attacks, starting and very similar to this one in Aurora, and more that'll be to come, plus the London Olympics, plus right up until what they're telling me is May 2013 when we're going to end up dealing with a collapsed magnetosphere for several hours that's going to basically char a certain portion of sunside Earth.
Right. It's called the kill shot.
Right. Yeah. So, I sent you a email. I don't know if you got it from me.
Well, I'm getting
so many, I'm sure.
Yeah. if you resend it and put private for John, then it'll get looked at, because I'm getting covered up between all my other work and the emails. It's just
right. Yeah, I understand.
So much one guy can do.
Yeah. I'm getting piled up too. I get, and you just never know how many who are, because I get similar reports, but there's no way for me to verify who's what and who's who. So a lot of just go in the trash box because it's like, is everybody just trying to get a piece of the wagon here or something?
Exactly. Well, Mike, you told us who your three sources are in general terms, but to give us an idea of what they're saying.
Well, the one guy I was telling you is telling me that they got the bang, the multiple scenario of several things happening at once,
right.
being ending, primary, the being the primary ending of the of all of these things being the collapse of our magnetosphere and the turning of the magnetic poles, both on Earth and Sun in May 2013. Mm-hmm. That's what they're aiming for. They're moving everybody into separate areas. One of them being a lot seems to be happening in the Mammoth Cave system in Kentucky. Also connected to Fort Campbell. I personally have, which my wife is sitting here can attest to. I used to work for Harris, and they have tried to recruit me several times to go try to help refurbish some non-micro electronic computers that have been down in the Mammoth Cave system. For quite a while. We've got, for 6 years, they've had the lower levels of the Mammoth Cave system shut off to tourists. You can only walk into that cave now, just about, quarter of a mile down to where the old saltpeter mine was, and that's about it, and a couple splunking tours. And then the other guys are telling them that they're just being told that they're being moved to Denver. They don't exactly know why or won't say. When I ask them a question, I just get weird things like exclamation points and stuff like that.
Well, and Mike, you have asked them specifically about this astronomical event, and that's when they just type the question or the exclamation points, right,
pretty much.
Okay. And you take that as confirmation.
Yeah, and then I got some others that when I got real specific, they stopped communicating with me at all.
Well, the government knows how to keep secrets, and they do it by two things, promises and threats.
Right.
The promise of a paycheck and a pension, the threat of losing a paycheck and a pension, and possibly going to jail or even worse.
Right.
So, yes, they don't fool yourself. I mean, the Manhattan Project, which my father and grandfather, being plumbers, both worked on, down there at Oak Ridge. They didn't have a clue what they were working on. Neither did most of the over 100,000 men and women who worked on it, the Manhattan Project, did not have a clue what in the world they were working on. So the government knows very well how to keep secrets. Now, Denver will be the primary new capital of the United States when this event happens. Atlanta will be the capital east of Mississippi and the secondary capital, Atlanta being the highest altitude major city east of the Mississippi River. And both of you gentlemen have probably heard of United States Northern Command, NORTHCOM for short, haven't you?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. It's a fairly new command. It's the Army command for North America. And beginning, I think it's now 3 to 4 years ago, they started splitting U.S. NORTHCOM, United States Northern Command, east-west at the Mississippi River, splitting all men, all equipment, and all supplies east-west at the Mississippi River. And, of course, they're doing it because Mississippi River, after this event, will be 50 to 100 miles wide, 100, 200 feet deep. And you don't build bridges across a river 100 miles wide. You simply don't do it.
Right.
It's a lot easier to split U.S. NORTHCOM now than it would be after the fact. And once again, they aren't telling the men why. Now, a friend of mine is a command sergeant major in the Army. He's about to retire. When he went to his briefing on NORTHCOM being split, he just sat there smiling to himself because he knew why. Nobody else, including the people giving the briefing, didn't know why.
Well, you know, and I've also noticed some things. I spend a lot of my time on the road on my job all over in Kentucky. And, you know, there's been a lot of things I've noticed, you know, when we're heading into when I'm heading in to do service calls into eastern Kentucky, we're always seeing these trucks with these, you know, and I know what a mine shaft liner looks like. And these aren't quite the same. They're 6 or 7 units on trucks with a spindle point and environmental packages. And it literally looks like, you know, basically a submarine hatch top, and it obviously intended to be buried for whatever reason.
Right.
And also I've been noticing over the last 6-7 years as they've been, you know, hardcore on this new infrastructure and road fixing, is that they're dropping bridges in where there really doesn't need to be. There'll be like a bridge that goes over just dirt. You know, it'll kind of look like okay, this is a bridge. Well, what's this for? There's no creek or river down there. And, you know, but it looks like the bridges are built. Each bridge seems to be set to hold one of those road breakers that, you know, that the military uses. It's a huge pipe that they lay across, pow, and it drops it. That seems to be the purpose of that. And and I've noticed this happening more and more around the larger cities when we're out on the roads, even out of town, as if they're going to you know, at some certain point, guarantee that people aren't going to be moving out of the cities really quick.
When you say a road breaker, give us more detail what that is.
It's kind of like a bomb, more or less. It's the width of the road. They lay it across the ends of bridges to basically drop the bridge.
Okay. We have a saying in Special Forces when it comes to demolitions, a bridge or anything else. Figure out precisely how much explosives you need to drop the bridge, and then double it.
Yeah.
You know, John, I just want to ask you a quick question. Since you've been doing this work, I mean, of course the government has ears and everything, and Mike made the statement that one of his sources deep inside said that there's good guys on the inside too, and they know we're doing this, and I think they're letting some of this message get out, and I think they're going to kind of leave us alone, so to speak, as long as we don't get too far outside the pace of what information they want to come out. Do you have any comments on that? Any advice to those of us who do these radio shows? And
well, our outreach, you know, there's 350 million people in the United States, and we're reaching a few thousand. That's it. And we present no threat to what they're doing. I've been on Fox News nationwide twice talking about terrorism. I was time to do the third show, and I was talking to a young lady in New York who talked way too fast. And she says, "What do you want to do next, John?" I said, "Well, how about this? Let's talk about the feel-good, make-believe security at these airports." She said, okay, I'll talk to my boss. So she gets back with me the next day. She says, sorry, John, we can't do that. It's too scary. So the prospect, gentlemen, of us getting this message on any outlet like Fox News or any of these other mass media places is almost non-existent, mm-hmm. almost non-existent. So based on that, our outreach is so small and so limited that we're just a fly on the back of a camel. I mean, we're nothing, you know.
Right. So basically, if we don't get too outrageous, they'll leave us alone and let
they
us continue.
They don't care
outrageous,
but they care about numbers. They care about
the venue. Venue, right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Ghostwalker, you with us? Maybe he has.
Sorry, you caught me a little off guard there, yeah.
Well, that's okay. Ghostwalker, did you have a Ghostwalker is a very trusted friend of mine, a survivalist, and teaches survival and preparation with us on the air here. Did you have any questions for John?
Did I have any questions? Well, you know, my point of view is I look at the survival side of things, and I don't look at the overall how it's coming and where it's coming from, but where it's going to be, and that's the survival part of it.
Right.
But, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I've heard so much about all this stuff going on, and I do understand, you know, the safety zones, and I.
Well, maybe John, did you want to spend a few moments, giving some advice to the folks here as far as preparation. And again, I just wanted to put out there that, folks, we're trying to bring you information. We want you to go and try to verify this or find out that it's true or not true, because if once you turn this through your own mind, then it'll be your information. You can make the proper decisions on what's best for you and your family. We're not trying to tell anybody to do anything at this point, but we're just bringing you information. So
absolutely. Well, the first and foremost thing is to get your spiritual house in order. We know from the experience of American POWs in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, that the men and women who were captured that had a strong spiritual foundation before they were captured had a far greater chance of surviving that experience than those that did not. That's pretty much a given. So it's not my job as a radio talk show host to tell you what your spiritual beliefs should be, but I do feel an obligation to advise you to get that part of your life in order. After that, you need to look at skills. The two skills that will be most necessary and in least supply will be the following two skills: emergency medical treatment and ham radio communication skills. Any group of people, whether it's 8 or 10 people or 1,000 people, that's the two skills that will be in greatest demand and shortest supply. So work on getting those skills. When it comes to first aid, emergency medical treatment, your local Red Cross, fire department, hospital, junior college, they're all places you can get first aid and CPR training. And you need equipment to go along with it, professional-grade equipment that you're qualified to use. If you try to use something, a medical equipment, and you're not qualified to use, you could seriously hurt or kill somebody. So be sure you get both the right training and the professional equipment to go along with it. Ham radio skills, well, effective communications can literally be a matter of life and death in a fast-moving emergency situation. You need to be able to intercept all government frequencies, whether it's your local police, sheriff's department, fire department, city workers, highway patrol, military, civilian and military aircraft. You have to be able to intercept all those communications, as well as be able to talk back and forth to the people that are in your neighborhood or relatives, whoever it might be that you need to communicate with in two-way radio communications. Almost every community of any size will have a ham radio club. You can find out about ham radio clubs by going to your local Radio Shack dealer, talking to the manager. Ham radio people are always in Radio Shack, and frequently they work at Radio Shack. You can also go to the FCC website, the Federal Communications Commission website, put in your zip code and get the name and address of every ham radio licensed person in any zip code in the country, because they are public federal licenses. And I know a lot of people in the Patriot community do not want any involvement of the federal government in their lives, and I respect that on one hand. On the other, you do need the knowledge. even if you decide not to get the license, you need the knowledge. You just don't, these radios are not cell phones, even though cell phones are radios. They're a bit more complex than a cell phone. You need the proper knowledge to effectively use these scanners and use two-way radio equipment. So that's the things that I emphasize, gentlemen. Obviously, there's dozens of other skills that a person would like to have, but those two foundational skills are really important for people to consider getting.
Excellent, excellent. And you yourself have located to the Missouri Ozarks, and what kind of rule of thumb advice would you give the folks as far as where would be a good place to be and what areas you'd want to avoid?
Well, you don't want to be near any major cities. When I say a major city, a city of 50,000 or more, you want to be, the bigger city, the farther away you want to be. Once you get up to 100,000 plus, you're getting into a pretty good sized city. So some distance from a city. You don't want to be near these coastlines. The U.S. Navy says all coastlines will take flooding up to 400 feet above sea level. East Coast will take damage up to the Blue Ridge Parkway, which a lot of it's 100 miles from the East Coast, by the way. Florida will be gone. Half the Gulf states will be gone. Texas will take a damage 80 to 100 miles inland. California, damage anywhere from 25 to 75, 100 miles inland, depending on what part of California. Washington State and Oregon, typically 50 or 60 miles inland, depending on where they are and how fast it gets, how high. You want to be in an area that's got a good growing season, plenty of water. The Denver area is great for the government because they've got the resources. It's a tough place to have a garden and fruit trees in Denver. A lot of that area is what's called high desert, and there's a dramatic shortage of moisture to do anything there of any consequence involving agriculture. You would ideally have a homogeneous population, which is what we have in the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks. Very few minorities. The Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks is a long distance from any major body of water. It has a long growing season, plenty of water, not very fertile land, but it doesn't take much to take a 40 by 50 foot area and spruce it up with some fertilizer and topsoil to make it suitable for growing a nice garden. Fruit trees and grapes do quite well in our area. You want to have all those things and hopefully have a network of people, as we say, of like mind. So within your neighborhood, within a short walk or a short drive away, that you can work with in a time of crisis to grow food, take care of animals, watch each other's children, and protect each other.
Yeah, I'd like to break in with something here real quick. I pulled up some of the conversation. I went to pull some of the conversation and see if I had any more messages from my guy. And I was going to read off. And here's one of the communications. After I had asked him a specific question, he said, by this time next year, people will be picking up the pieces of once what was. That's why the power elite are collapsing society beginning in a few weeks. Government is relocating underground, relocating inland and underground, and that's the trend. The government does not have the resources to bother with preppers on a large scale. We're too busy covering our own six. Then I noticed he sent me final message that he'll be in transition for about a month beginning this Friday, which means he has no contact. They have an 80% solution in terms of what will be transpiring, so there's no need to conduct further research. And I can't contact him back because as he was sending his last message with a document and attachment, his accounts have been deleted, and I lost contact with him now. So
we're looking at a pretty short time frame here, aren't we, gentlemen?
This is very strange, you know, and I'm kind of... I've been chasing this for about a year here at the station, John, and you know, and there are moments I just want to go, what kind of craziness am I trying to deal with here? Because I'm not the typical, you know, the doomer kind of guy, but it just more and more things are just looking hinky everywhere.
And I'd rather ride my motorcycle and toss a football with my grandson, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I could be bragging on my grandson for the last 15 minutes here, real easy, a typical grandparent. But at some point I realized years ago that we would get to a point where it was in our face. And, you know, I started looking into this matter the spring of 2000. That's 12 years ago. Two friends of mine, both researchers independently with knowing each other, approached me about the 10th planet. I basically said, gentlemen, you guys need tinfoil hats real bad. So I went ahead because I respect them, and I approached a friend of mine who's associated with the lettered agencies, and I said, can you check this out? It's really strange, but we need to check it out. So he told me I needed a tinfoil hat, and he went ahead and checked it out anyway. Guy gets back with me a few weeks later and says, John, it's exactly what you said it is. They've known about this since 1979. They've been getting ready since 1979. That's 12 years ago. It's been a long quest, a very long quest. Mm-hmm. And here we are. We may be down to the final few weeks, months. I don't know. I would love to have till May of 2013. That would be a blessing from God.
Right. Excellent time to prepare, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, I'm, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, as I understand it with that particular set of information, that's the last in a long chain of events.
Right. And so, John, do you have any indicators that people should be looking at, sort of a checklist to say, when such and such and such happens, then we need to be concerned? I mean, do you have any sort of a mental checklist of what we should be looking for?
Yeah, well, here's what you look for. Well, let's just take, for example, the August 17th date, which has been given, and it may or may not be real. I expect that if August 17th is a real date for the closest passage of this object, that the 7 days before that might be a little bit longer. We're going to see a dramatic increase in the number and severity of earthquakes and volcanoes. A dramatic increase. Now, that's my opinion based on what I know, which may or may not be accurate. That may not happen until the day before. When you start seeing a bunch of 8-point and maybe even 9-point earthquakes, more than one in a day or two, that should get your attention. It's going to get my attention. I'll be calling my daughter, who lives in Seattle. I say, honey, it's time to get on the plane and get your butt down here. Because this is the place where she and her family will be best at surviving, as opposed to the suburbs of Seattle, which is not a good place to be. So that's what I would look for. Now, there's a possibility that one or more of my sources may give me a heads up that they're evacuating now. This dependent received that briefing. They say they may get as much as 2 weeks' notice. They may not. It's nothing we can depend on. The best thing is to have a plan and a plan B and a plan C. Everybody should have backups on the backups and be ready to grab whatever their stuff is and get out if they're on a coastal area. To leave on a moment's notice, hesitating 15 minutes may make the difference between getting out and not getting out. So grab your stuff if you're on a coastal area. One of the things we're concerned about is this ridge of rock in the Canary Islands. If one of these earthquakes shakes it loose, it would create a tidal wave moving not quite the speed of sound, aimed directly at the coast of North America, the east coast of North America, wiping out the east coast of North America. And that would be about 8 hours to travel at not quite the speed of sound across the Atlantic Ocean. We may or may not get any warning of that. And if it's in the middle of the night, there probably won't be any warning. If it's a daytime event, the government may not warn us anyway. We don't know what these ding-dongs are going to do. So,
right.
So be prepared. Be always prepared spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally, to do what you need to do at that moment in time.
Excellent, excellent advice. And of course, you know, folks, we don't have access to the NASA scientists and the military secrets and the governmental secrets. John does to a certain extent because of his extensive military background and the gentleman that he's known over his lifetime. But what we're dealing with is circumstantial evidence. And I would like to remind you, circumstantial evidence is perfectly good evidence in a court of law. If you have enough of it, you can convict somebody of murder beyond a reasonable doubt. And so what we've been doing is building a wall one brick at a time, trying to bring you information. Now, what's the inference? I guess the way I would put this to you is, if you're standing on a street corner, okay, and from behind the building, which you cannot see, you hear a woman scream and a gunshot, and a man run around the corner with a gun in his hand, what are you going to conclude? That the man shot the woman, okay, or something thereabouts, some kind of crime occurred. Well, again, we don't have access to the military secrets, the governmental secrets, the NASA data, that type of thing. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to use our wits to try to build an argument with the geopolitical, with the earth changes, with our human resources and our confidential sources, and try to give you the best picture we can paint of what we think is going on. So, again, we're not trying to tell anybody to panic or do anything adverse to your interests. We're just trying to, for speaking strictly for me, and I would suspect that the other gentlemen on the call feel the same way. Because for whatever reason, I've been given this knowledge. I don't know why. God gave me the brains to figure this out. And my personal belief is he also gave me the obligation to try to get the word out. So that's kind of my motivation here. I'm trying to get the word out so people can do the right thing. They can do their own research. They can see, oh, you guys are smoking wacky tobacco or whatever, or they may, you know, they may say, wait a minute, what are these guys talking about? I need to think about this. Is the government lying to me? So I don't know, John, do you have any closing thoughts on that?
I can just piggyback on what you're saying there, Andy. I also advise people to make prudent preparations. You know, I'm not saying throw the kids and dogs in the minivan and head off to the mountains and live underneath the plastic tarpaulin. You know, well, there are people who've done that, by the way. I'm saying making prudent preparations. Don't quit your job. You know, don't do anything crazy. Get a plan A and a plan B. If you can secure a safe haven away from a city, with a friend or a relative, somebody you went to college with, whatever it is, secure that place and get some food stocked up there and medical supplies, and make sure that they know you're coming and they're welcome you coming. And that'll give you a destination. And that'll give you hope. Hope is a really good thing, especially if it's hope based on reality as opposed to some fictitious, Batman in the Woods kind of thing, you know? So, yeah, prudent preparation, a plan A, a plan B, and a reasonable expectation of being able to carry out these plans.
Excellent, excellent advice. And, well, John, did you want to add anything else? We're drawing down to the break at the end of the hour here, and I know you got to
get
up. Well,
my website is, let's get that out, my website is thelibertyman.com. I'm on Republic Broadcasting Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 East Coast time, and my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, is available for sale, and I have a toll-free order line 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543.
Wonderful, and don't you have a special show tomorrow with Mike
tomorrow
Harris?
Tomorrow is the day we've been waiting for. We'll have Mike Harris on. We're going to talk about these things in some detail.
All right, and then
okay,
great,
wonderful.
I wanted to ask one more question. John, until we get through all this, do you have the time and energy to visit with us once a month on this show?
I think we can probably arrange that. It's a little late for me. I go to bed at 9 o'clock and get up at 5 a.m. my time.
Okay. Yeah, you do have an early show.
Yeah, well, it's I've gotten used to it, and I have gotten used to go to sleep early, but once a month I can probably work that in.
Sure. Okay, cool.
Wonderful. Okay, gentlemen, well, thank you, John, for coming on the show, and I think, you know, this is great information. I know there's several thousand people listening. We've got a good listenership tonight, and everyone check John out tomorrow morning on Republic Broadcasting. 8 a.m. Okay, hey, welcome back to Rural Prepper Solutions, the second half here from 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to about midnight, and I hope everyone enjoyed the John Moore interview. He's very electrifying. He had some great information, and actually we shared information with him tonight, some of which he hadn't heard before. Nighthawk had some great stuff. So, fellas, let's go around the table and comment, and then maybe we can open the lines up. What do you guys think about all this stuff?
Well, I'm a little concerned that my guy is just poof. I talked to him earlier today. Now suddenly his Facebook account is gone. His email is returning emails. They're not going to destination anymore. Just poof. That concerns me. And I told you his last message said that he'll be in transition for 30 days. So, well, I think that's kind of odd. If not odd, it was planned that way. I don't know.
Well, maybe he gave you as much information as he could, and his time was short, and that's kind of all he can do right now, you know?
Right.
That's what it sounded like to me from what you read.
Right. Strange.
Ghostwalker, comments?
Ghostwalker's always going to comment, but I tend to repeat myself sometimes. I mean, I was just talking to Knight's wife and kind of making the point how people get, you know, caught up in their own little worlds, and they're stuck. They're at that point where they believe that, you know, this boy that cried wolf all the time, and it's nothing's ever happened, so it's not going to happen. If it does happen, my government will be more than happy to help, you know, take care of me. If you believe that, you got some serious problems. My biggest thing is, I mean, I say it over and over again. History has proven time and time again that devastations happen. And some of them just happen to be on that little time, you know, that time scale where it happens every, that same period, every so many thousands of years. It happens. It will happen. And if it doesn't happen and it needs a boost from, you know, our loving governments will be more than happy to give it a boost. The fewer the people, the less the resistance. And yeah, they're going to say, no, the government's not going to do that. Yes, the government will do that. If you think the government loves you, you're seriously, seriously demented. The government does not love you. You've been lied to for so many years. And the only thing I can tell you is things are going to happen, whether you believe it or not. And the most important thing I could ever tell anybody is a prepared mind does not panic. A panic mind is doomed to die.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, exactly. Okay, Acid, well, what were your comments on all that?
Well, to be honest with you, this is the first time I've ever heard of John Moore and the stuff that he was saying, and boy, it floored me. The stuff that was saying, which I'm going to have to do my own research, which is always good. You know, you don't want to go ahead and listen to somebody say, oh, you know, it's the end of the world, whatnot. You know, do your own research. That's what I'm going to do after the show. I'm going to do a lot of extensive research on John Moore and the stuff that he said. And, man, even with Hawk, with his contact and everything, saying what he said, man, you know, what does a person have to think? You know, I'm floored.
Well, and again, it's you know, I asked them the question, what do you think about the police state and all these laws they've passed and the NDAA and the executive orders and all this weird stuff that's going on? I asked him, do you see that complementing the science and the research? And he said, yes. So that's I think if you're talking about the great meatball in the sky, people are going to make fun of you. And they're going to say, go put a tinfoil hat on. If you're talking about a secret shadow government by itself, they're going to say, you know what, you need to wear a tinfoil hat. But when you put the two together, then I think you got to scratch your head and say, wait a minute, let me think about this a second time. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of weird. And Weisenberg in the chat room thinks a heavy mass object is coming from inside the Earth. Our planet is an egg and it's about to hatch. Okay. So, hey, listen, folks, you know, I know you've been listening patiently. We'll open the phone lines up. Please, no trolling, hacking, swearing. Just, you know, if you don't agree with us, that's fine. Just present your argument. 347-688-2902. The phone lines are open. 347-688-2902, or you can Skype Freedom Screen, all one word, Freedom Screen. So call in. So there you go.
Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff that he said that, man, it. I don't want to say it's, you know, non-believable, but the stuff that's going on today with our government and the stuff that they're implementing, it's scary.
Mm-hmm. And I would suppose, I mean, I don't agree with it, because I've always advocated telling people the truth because that's the right thing to do, but I can see, not that I agree with it, I can see why they're doing what they're doing, if that indeed is the case, because if you're the government and you get this information, you get it scientifically confirmed, you're saying, oh my God, what am I going to do? You know, what am I going to do? If I tell everybody, they're going to panic, right? And there's going to be mass chaos in the streets. We won't be able to control anything. Of a breakdown of society, people will go insane. So maybe that what we do is we prepare the best we can, continuity of government and that type of thing, and try to save as many people as possible. But that, not that I agree with that, but I think that's probably their rationale. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, and I think there's a certain amount of, it's like I was telling you last week, it's almost as if somebody clicked the switch and said, okay, here's a set amount of people, and I want you guys to start leaking stuff into alternative media, is what it feels like. Because it was almost at the same time John Moore was started getting his info. You remember I started sending you stuff I was getting?
Mm-hmm.
Almost within days of each other. And it's, you know, click, 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 click. Now, is it all PSYOP? You know, there's always that question. But, yeah, you know, if you tell from a governmental standpoint or point of view, you know, if they go on CNN Live and say, okay, everybody's going to die in a month, what do you think society's going to be like for the next month?
Oh, God, yeah.
It'd be worse than the disaster itself.
Mm-hmm.
Or a disaster of any sort.
The
disaster.
That's right. And I think people, anybody who listens to this, and again, it's taken me, well, my journey from waking up, it's been over 2 years, but it takes an awful, if this is true, okay, it would take an awful long time for anybody to wrap their mind around this. I'm still pinching myself every day, and I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking about it. I'm like, no, go back. Do your fun things, play your bass, play music, watch football, go out and drink beer on the weekend, don't worry about it. But I keep coming back to this information. I'm like, oh my God, you know, it takes a long time for anybody to wrap their head around it. And you heard what he said, you know, how they pick the guys to serve on the submarines. You have to have a strong mental constitution and be psychologically sound. And that's another aspect. If they let this stuff out, I mean, like you said, I mean, people will go berserk, don't you think?
Oh, I agree 100%.
Well, yeah, of course.
I mean, if what we're saying is, I mean, the one scientist basically says, you know what, it's over. You might as well lean over and kiss your ass goodbye. That's it. Forget it. Go get your Bible and start praying. So, I mean, I'm not saying that, but I mean, if you started telling people this stuff ahead of time, that's kind of what a large segment of the population is gonna figure out. You know what I'm saying? And then all hell breaks loose.
Right. You know, we have enough record to know that something of a similar of what we're talking about has happened before.
Mm-hmm.
Even in a time when man was even able to leave record about it, Ghost and I were talking about it today. You know, it's not like writing on paper. If you're going to sit down and chunk something into stone, it's not going to be, you know, It by Stephen King. It's going to be information. You know, but fictional works of writing are reasonably a new form of stuff, as, you know, it became easier to actually put it down on paper or whatever, but.
Right. Well, 347-688-2902, 347-688-2902, or Skype into Freedom Screen. We should bring the voice of reason in here, Mr. Weisenberg. What do you guys think? Let's see. Weisenberg, if you're within the sound of my voice, I think you are. I think you should call in and a couple of the other regulars. Let's get some dialogue going here. Let's fire this stuff up, guys. And after the delay hits him, he probably will call in.
Yeah, it looks like Tom wants to call in, and Resonated appears wants to call in and tell us what a bunch of idiots we all are. Anyway.
Good, come on, call in.
Come on.
Come on, guys, call in. 347-688-2902, 347-688-2902, or Skype into Freedom Screen. And of course, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, as a prepper, I will say this. Everything I have and everything I have stored, I will eventually use anyway. I don't have all that much stuff that is, what did you call it, non-usable. You know, I don't buy supplies that are just going to rot if I, you know, the world doesn't, or if there isn't some major issue, event, disaster, economic, planetary, astrological, whatever you might want to call it. It's all stuff I'll eventually use. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with having it. We're already, again, dealing with food inflation that's just going to go off the hook, off the chain, off
that's
the reservation
correct.
In the next month or two. You know, corn is at ridiculous levels. I'm seeing the corn block, the box of cornflakes, same price, just shrunk by 4 ounces this week. Seriously. Same thing with corn chips, you know. And we're going to start seeing that downline right through sugar and everything else. So
now's the time to get your freeze-dried food or whatever survival food you want to get, whether it's just regular canned food or whatever you want to do, because if any of this stuff, if even if we're half correct on the timeline, the window's closing. And I just wanted to tell all the folks out there listening on the station, on their iTunes, and also our friends in the Pal Talk rooms, this is kind of your warning. People, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? You know, I don't know if I wake up tomorrow and the internet's gone, the cell phone's gone. I can't. We don't know this. You know, I'm hoping we can get the message out, but at a certain point in time, you know, this may be it. So, I mean, you know, not that we're trying to make you panic, not that we're trying to tell you what to believe. Please go do the research. And you heard all the stuff we talked about. If you see this stuff starting to happen, then chances are pretty good that the rest of the story is correct. Right. But also, Weisenberg is thinking that we're going to hatch the Earth is an egg, and we're going to hatch the egg pretty soon. He's got a different idea.
Oh, come on,
right?
We tried everything else. Why not that? Well, they say that all the ancient texts say that thing that comes through space has big wings on it, and it's the winged demon or the winged nemesis in the wing. It's its mother. It's the egg's mother's coming back. It's going to sit on the planet. And it's going to be like, bah!
Yeah, but it's more than that. It's etched in stone. It's in stone.
Yeah. All right, we got two callers. Area code 256 called in first, followed by area code 803.
Hey, you know, this thing getting closer was cataloged by NASA for the longest time, and I believe there are still screenshots or image captures of NASA's screen up, and it has little numbers and coordinates and what constellation it's next to. But in the last 10 years, they had pulled it, but you can still find the screen capture of that page. Hmm. And that they had showed something up there in the night sky. You know, I don't know if you could have seen it, but it was there.
Yeah, you know, I've also found over the last few days, I pulled up NOAA and I was looking at both Doppler radar and satellite. Now, everybody knows I'm not much for the whole chemtrail deal, but I swear to God, it looked like half the Midwest had been striped. All over that. It was just kind of strangest looking thing I'd ever seen. Now, I don't know if it was clouds breaking up and rolling, but it literally looked like half the Midwest had stripes laid down on top of it. It was crazy.
803, you're on the air.
What's up, guys? So that resonated. So you were talking about the strikes. Do you know about the geoengineering experiment supposed to go down in New Mexico?
No, go ahead.
Well, they did one over. They tried to get it passed in Britain, and there was so much public outrage over what they were trying to do that it didn't happen. It was postponed, pending investigation, which is going to take 3 years. So that got hexed. But they were going to have a blimp and tow it behind a boat to release stratospheric aerosol, basically sulfur, to simulate a volcanic explosion. The whole idea is there was this volcano. I can't remember the specific one. I'm just going to spit all this out real quick. There's a volcano that went off. The ash covered, you know, all the northern hemisphere, and they said that the entire world cooled by point something degrees. And all the scientists immediately went, whoa, you know, that's a solution for global warming. So all these geoengineers, one of the things they talk about is called solar radiation management, SRM. And that's where it's a stratospheric well-back seeding, if you're wanting to Google it. But that's the patent for it. But the idea is you put reflective aerosol agents into the air. The sunlight that's coming down is reflected back into space. That's one method. They also have, like, shiny crops that you can grow to reflect it back into space. And then there's several other different methods. They got these boats that'll suck water up from the ocean, turn it into water vapor, mixed with aluminum and barium and all that kind of stuff. But if you're looking for, like, when I heard about chemtrails, I said, well, there's got to be some fact behind it, you know what I mean, before I'm really going to believe it. And there's enough facts out there. I don't think that people who, you know, us, you know, subscribe to a conspiracy theory, I just don't think they have a method behind the madness. Like, I enjoy everything that John Moore just said. That was awesome. I mean, I've never heard of the guy either till today, and I bookmarked his website. I thought it was really a great interview, and you guys did a great job too.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that. Yeah. He's a smart guy, and he's got the background. I mean, he's not some flake. I mean, the guy is a Vietnam combat vet, and I guess he flew – I think it was in the Marine Corps. He flew jets or something. If you look at his webpage, 57 combat missions, homicide detective. So this guy's putting his name on the line. And, you know, we've talked.
And I was going to say that, you know, for me as a consummate, you know, skeptic, that lends credibility to the story. I mean, I don't know anything about the guy. I don't know about his past. But, I mean, that tends to lend credibility to it, the fact that he does have a documented past and a name that is actually ascribed to it.
Well, it's right. Not only that, it's the sources he has. You know, these are very credible people that he's talking to, wives of ranked generals, multi-star generals, I'm sure. And
did he name any of them? Like,
no. He keeps them anonymous if they're still alive, just to keep them from losing their pension, I believe.
Yeah,
but
I'm just playing devil's advocate. But, you know, as long as, you know, in a court of law, let's just put it that way, unless you have, and I heard what you said about, you know, multiple levels of evidence building up and that solves the case. But for me personally, like, if you tell me this story, and then I say, who'd you hear that from? Well, I can't tell you. You know, I'm immediately skeptical is all I'm saying. But, you know, at the same time, I have heard this from 2,000 different sources. I can give you most of those right now if you want to hear them. but anyway, so obviously you do. The picture the last caller was talking about, that the origins of that story are this. The South Pole Telescope, they have this thing called the Viper Telescope. It's really dope. Check it out on my website, resonated.com. The Viper Telescope, the Viper Telescope took a picture of this object. It's a red glowing object. It has seven bodies around it. They assumed that the red object was a small star or something, and that the white objects around it were moons or small planets. So there were seven of them. A little bit of history for those that don't know. In Revelations, they talk about wormwood, the seven-horned whatever. I don't know it perfectly, but anyway, there's seven blah, blah, blahs on it. It comes across the sky. This thing's got seven planets, you know, circling around it. There's the tie-in. It's also called Marduk by the Sumerians and Nibiru and Hercolobus and Long-tail heavenly climbing star and the Kachina thing.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it goes to this. Every single religion of the world talks about this event when this body comes by and cleans the entire world. The oceans leave their basins. Plato said that the Mediterranean emptied. That ended up on the East Coast. So we all know how that works. And then it's also been recently talked about that the Pyramid of Giza is a clock that tells you when it's going to happen again.
Wow.
The nose of the Sphinx points at, I believe it's Regulus or Sirius, and then over the centuries, it takes X amount of years. When the nose points back at that star, that signifies its return. But, yeah, I really do follow it, but I try to, you know, I try to at least have some kind of source where I'm drawing my stuff from. I'm not just some guy, you know, that I don't even know. I don't trust anybody, you know. So if I hear it, I want to hear it from some scientific geek that's like, oh, my, look what I found, you know.
So, well, I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say all John Moore is trying to do is generate the curiosity to get us to look this up at the best. He's bringing a topic that needs to be talked about out to the general public.
Definitely. You know, and I would rather ask people to, you know, there's a selfish reason for this, too. I kind of need people to have their crap together because I really don't want them at my doorstep if something happens. I mean, really, I don't. I don't want people showing up here with nothing in their hands. You know, I got enough to deal with myself. You know, that's the selfish part of this, I guess, you know, because my wife says, oh, you talk big, but you probably couldn't do nothing. You'd probably just whatever until we all died or whatever, you know. I couldn't shoot a mom with her kid that was hungry. I don't know. I just couldn't do it. I might say I would, but when it comes down to it, I doubt I could, you know. Get off my property or you're going to die, bam, bam. That's just not.
But everybody knows that's what's going to happen. You know what I mean? When it comes down to it, and the whole world's imploded, and there's no more cops or McDonald's or, you know, TV football games to distract anybody. They're all going, oh crap. They're going to be without food within 3 days. You're going to have people at your front door, and every single day it's going to be a shootout.
Yeah, you know, I know one guy. He's in probably one of the more bad areas of Lexington, and he's just a great big honey hole. The guy's house is like, have you ever seen Hoarders?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's like that with freeze-dried food, can openers, medical supplies, stuff like that. You can barely walk through his house. In fact, he's getting rid of his normal stuff to make more room for boxes of stuff. And I'm like, okay, in this area neighborhood, if the crap hits the fan, you're not getting this out of this apartment. And if anybody knows it, they're going to kill you and take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of like the whole zombie line is effectively talking about, you know, the destruction of society, because in the end there's going to be hordes of zombies at your door and you're going to have to fend them off.
Right. You know, and
well, I spoke with a local sheriff's deputy over here, one of the surrounding communities of Columbus, Ohio, and they've done zombie drills before. So, and I've heard, I don't know if this thing comes through, one of the things that I've heard is it could affect your brain but leave the rest of your body intact. Is that where the zombie stuff's coming from? I don't know. I'm just throwing that stuff out there. That's some of the stuff I've heard. So
I have a theory on that. You're talking
about the magnetic erasing of the brain?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's not impossible.
It's completely possible, and especially if Nibiru is a magnetic object, as they describe, then the whole zombie mythology could talk about people standing there in the street just kind of drooling. You know, they're completely zombied out because your brain works on electricity. And that circuit's easily interruptible. I mean, they've been studying it for years. They can shoot waves into your head and make you feel a way.
Yeah, well, you know what the cool thing is about my house? It's old, and it was made out from metal grate, pig hair plaster. It's got a metal roof that is electrically connected to. I have grating, steel grating, in my walls, two sides, on the inside and the outside, that has pig hair plaster over the top of it, and then the regular plaster on top of that. So I live in a Faraday cage on top of limestone.
Wow, if anything does happen, you know, you're racing other mines and everything, hijacker's safe.
Oh, come on.
We love you, hijacker.
Yeah.
Are you talking to me? That was me talking about that. This is Nighthawk, not hijacker.
I know that. I said hijacker would be safe. I wasn't talking about you. Because I'm going to be the guy that's going to be knocking at your front door. So I got to be nice to you.
Well, you know, I guess what will happen is in another 12,500 years, the next generations of Eric Von Daniken's will be talking about me, and I'll be the Anunnaki because my brain won't be erased because I was in a giant house-sized Faraday cage.
Yeah, there you go.
Can you guys imagine of someone who's an outsider who just stumbled onto this station tonight, who had never heard anything about the Truth or Movement or any of this stuff before, and sat there and listened to this? What do you think they would think?
Oh, God, I can imagine going to work tomorrow morning.
There's some dude on there who says that the planet's a pig. These people are nuts.
Oh, my God.
You know,
Look at the big picture. And let's just assume for just a moment that there isn't Nibiru. There isn't a dark star. It's not there. With as much stuff has been passed around the internet and tubes and radio stations, it doesn't even need to exist for them to use it.
That's correct.
All they have to do is come out and say, yep, okay, we're finally going to admit that there's a big planet coming, and so we need to have martial law, and everybody needs to get all their stuff packed and move out of your house and obey us and all this stuff. And so many people will be falling all over themselves because they believe it already. They don't even need to have a heavy mass object. All they have to do is just say there is one.
Oh, yeah. You know, I am a little concerned about just due to the Mayan thing that's been shoved into the popular media, even to everybody, you know, how many suicides there might end up being at the equinox this year. Mm. You know, especially when that daytime comet becomes visible, everybody's going to say, oh, my God, it's a sign from heavens.
Heaven's Gate.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's called Project Bluebeam. Where they see visions of gods or UFOs, and you know it's a false flag. You've never heard of Blue Beam?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Heard of it.
Yeah, well, I mean that's what the whole Nibiru thing feeds into, and I mean just in my opinion.
So there's three possibilities. Right. We're wearing tinfoil hats. None of this is true. There's something wrong with us. Number two, it's true. Number three is they're going to fake it. So those are sort of the three options out there, huh?
Yeah, and what's the easiest one?
Fake it.
They've got the ability to do that with LIDARs.
The ultimate false flag. I mean, they don't even need to do anything. We wouldn't even need to have to do anything. All they got to do is just make an announcement on the news and say, okay, we're admitting it. NASA admits it, all these people that have been saying that nothing ever happened, that, yep, it's coming, and here it comes, and all that, and flying in the face of every person who's ever taken a course in physics, they will say, yep, it's out there, it's going to destroy us. Because if something's coming, it's one, not heavy mass, we'd be dead. It could be something small, and maybe that's why we can't see it, just because it's tiny. Now, something tiny could do something like this. I mean, it could even be smaller than, you know, Mercury. I mean, just tiny. And it could cause the kind of things that are happening. But a heavy mass object.
Well, it could be as small as our moon and as dense as Jupiter.
Well,
it could be minor, and they could exacerbate it with nukes or whatever, you know, HARP, whatever, and make it look like it's a real big deal.
Yeah, if Harper actually does what people say that it does, they don't need a heavy mass object in order to convince people there is one.
Yep.
And right now, they don't need to convince people there is one, because there's too many people out there doing it for them. They don't have to put any money or effort or anything into spreading mass confusion about a potential object, because everybody's doing it for them. They got plenty, there's plenty of people out there that are just jumping on this bandwagon.
I don't know.
It's like when you say the thing about, you talk about like if this was a courtroom, you know, circumstantial evidence would count.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you say that, I actually say out loud, and people, my kids have actually heard me say it, and they kind of look at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm just talking to a guy on the radio, and I'm not even talking. But I always say the same thing.
An alternative.
You know, somebody will say something, and I'll say, I object, hearsay.
What if the people who actually run the world, the people who actually like own it all, and you guys know who I'm talking about, what if they hired people to constantly come up with stories to keep people distracted? Is that far-fetched?
Yeah.
You mean like professional bullshit artists?
Yeah, like sock
puppets.
They
feed it to the mainstream media or major outlets like YouTube where this stuff gets around.
Well, yeah, that is not far-fetched. We all know that they... Like, the whole conversation with all of the activist places that I've frequented seems to revolve around the trolls and shills who come in. So you say chemtrail, and they come in, oh, tinfoil hat. Well, what about the people who actually create that media to keep people off the subject? Like, for instance, with the chemtrails. In 1980, the conversation was acid rain. That's all I learned about, and, you know, college and acid rain. And then all of a sudden, through craftiness and controlling the message, that word was removed from popular media. And now people talk about chemtrails, and nobody says global dimming or, you know, weather modification or climate change as a result of pollution in the atmosphere. Nobody talks about the real problem. They talk about depopulation and Monsanto and, you know, yeah, Monsanto and Bill Gates and depopulation and geoengineers may have something to do with it, but what we know for fact is that all of those chemical emissions from airplanes screw up the climate, they mess with the weather, they reduced the sunlight coming into our planet by 22% over the last 30 years. And they cause acid rain, which is causing the entire ocean to be full of acid, but nobody's talking about it. And nobody's doing anything about it. Because the message has been controlled. It has been derailed. It has been thrown off the path to actually achieving something. I mean, they can't stop flying, but you could sure get NASA to hurry it up and get an engine together that won't, you know, burn that stuff out there.
You know, the thing that just struck me is if any of this stuff is true, guess who's going to be in charge when it happens?
Obama.
Me.
Barry.
Oh, I thought me.
Yeah. That's scary. Don't you think? Maybe that's why they put him there.
I always ask the question because people say, oh, they're trying to get us to look the other direction. And I'm always saying, look the other direction from what? What are they doing that we're looking at? If the heavy mass object is just a ploy to get us to look another direction, or a war is to get us to look at another direction, or the thing with the oil is to look in another direction, if every single thing they're doing is making us look in another direction, then what is it that they're actually doing? Because they're doing stuff everywhere. I mean, it's even in space now, underground, in the ocean, in the deserts, it burns, and everywhere you look, there's something going on. And if that's supposed to they're running out of places for us to be distracted from.
Well, I think the real distractions are the ones that you actually see. It's the ones that you don't see that are actually, that I think might actually be more truthful than fiction.
And that's exactly what I said. I always said, and I've always been told this, that fact is scarier than fiction. I mean, when you really hear, talk to any cop, they'll scare the pants off of you.
But what they're really scared of, I mean, everybody already knows about the bankers and LIBOR and how they've been building a lie for years and years, and now all of their debts are coming due this December, and the whole world's going to implode monetarily. That's beside the point. What everybody is concerned about also is the weather. There's a company called Aqueous. They're moving columns of water across the Horn of Africa. That water's crossing the ocean, hitting India. 100 million people have been displaced from their homes from torrential flooding. That water continues on to China. Hundreds of people dead, thousands displaced, monumental flooding. Then it continues on to Japan, where it's supposed to get to because there's a lot of radiation shooting out of that thing. So what you do is you keep constant weather modification, going cloud seeding, whatever it takes. Suppression with HARP. Use HARP to push the radiation down. Ionize the air so that it falls into the ocean, because we don't want that in America.
I waited till midnight, almost. My mom didn't even call me, wish me happy birthday.
You're on the air.
I don't care. All
right.
I said I was done.
Yeah. Anyway, folks, if you want to call in, there's plenty of room here for other people. 347-688-2902. That's 347-688-2902. 347-688-2902. Or you can Skype into Freedom Screen.
You ever wonder what they spent the money on? Now, what is it up to now? Some almost $250 billion or whatever. Half a quadrillion. What did they spend that on? What did they buy? I don't understand. What did they buy with all this money?
Politicians.
Yeah, but then that means politicians Denver have the airport. Money. What did they buy?
They bought the Denver airport.
Denver airport doesn't cost a quadrillion. I actually asked a question in the Skype message thing when Moore was on, and it was that somebody was talking earlier.
Give me Tyler. What was he doing? He's coming by. Well,
somebody was talking earlier about the fires that are in Colorado, and you know, there's all these people talking about how they've, you know, caught Russian troops setting them, and that they're being set on fire, and it's a distraction, whatever. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, what would be the purpose other than, oh, we want to make a smoke screen so nobody can see what we're doing? Well, they control the satellites anyway, so it's that doesn't make any sense. But what would be the purpose of burning down a state? I don't understand why ruining tons of forest. Well, what is that going to accomplish?
Hello.
Put smoke in the air or something and cool the earth? I'm not sure what the purpose of doing that on purpose would be.
Definitely free up a bunch of new government land with no timber to worry about with where's my word? Environmental people.
Hello. Oh, yeah. Probably be a lot easier to actually monitor that area if they wanted to have a big open space and catch people coming across it.
Yep.
Yes.
You guys might want to look up the NADEX and event contracts, NADAEX, North American Derivatives Exchange. There's a bunch of stockbroker, one percenter, banker trash holes that go on there and they bet on the weather. Now, some of it's pretty simple, like my crops may not yield, so, you know, I want to insure them so if they don't get rain, you know, that they can cash in on it. But some of it's pretty nefarious, like, why don't I sell all my properties in X County and then pay a guy to destroy it with weather and then come buy it back after it's destroyed for a quarter of the cost? And this is all documented online on the government website.
Wow.
Something to think about.
The Commodities Trade Commission is actually doing a public inquiry right now into event contracts if you'd like to call in and actually do something about it. But right now, stockbrokers are betting on the weather, and not in a good way. Trust me, it's not the way you think it is. You need to really look it up.
Okay. Stu, are you with us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. Go ahead.
Nighthawk.
Yes.
Your source, what did he say in exactly the time period of this thing coming in? Is he talking the 17th to the 26th, or is he talking later in the timeline? Because it seems to me that it's kind of a psych op at the moment, and that this thing is actually coming in later in the timeline.
Well,
the last process or the last bit of the process seems to be this May 2013 event with the magnetosphere that they're almost depending on happening.
So May the 23rd of 2013.
Right. And then everything else is like, you know, there's going to be multiple events all the way up to it, starting with the collapsing of society somehow within the next few weeks.
Okay, because I've been going over my notes, and I've been doing sort of like a Earth report for Terrell's research group. And I've started to do a dead astronomer's report, and it's very interesting that quite a lot of microbiologists have been killed over the last, 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
But not a lot of people know that there's been dead astronomers. Now, there's 66 dead astronomers. There's a very interesting case out of the South Pole Telescope from a guy called Rodney Marks. Now, he's a very interesting case. He got poisoned. They took him to New Zealand. Then a senator or congressman from America working for Raytheon rang up the New Zealand health minister and said, "We don't want you investigating and doing an autopsy on his body." Raytheon, the South Telescope, you know, there's so much going on. There's so much information out there to prove that they've been covering this up for so long. It's just one thing of many, many things. Now, my point is here that I believe it's a psyop at the moment because of this reason. We are not having the Earth changes that you would expect with this thing to be closer. Why I say that is that on the 24th of January of this year, there was 32 volcanoes erupting and 67 with minor activity. At the moment, we've got 27, you know, and there's only like 52 that have got minor activity. So we've got to downplay. This is my opinion. I could be wrong.
Right.
But we haven't got as many volcanoes erupting, for one, and in minor or, you know, unrest. Okay, the other thing is the earthquakes. Today we're at 6.1, but look, we haven't had the sizable earthquakes that we were having. So it doesn't show me the actual activity affecting the Earth at the moment. That's where I'm coming from.
Okay, let me make a quick interrupt here before everybody else takes off. Okay, this little math thing that I got sent to me the other day, which I accidentally typoed part of it. I had set 0.58, but actually 0.28 mass at a little over 28 degrees Z south, which would actually be Z north to our point of reference, because everything in space is basically, you know, when you look at something in space, it's upside down to our point of reference. So that, and putting it out there in the range either between Saturn and Jupiter or between Jupiter and Mars, where the asteroid belt is, and something of a 0.8 mass passing through our asteroid belt would definitely create many of the past effects we felt. Sometimes good, sometimes not bad, it's disastrous. You know, just depending on how much junk might be coming along with it. You know, what it might knock out of orbit. You know, it's kind of like hitting the pool balls. Bang! You know, and then the pool balls fly in directions, bounce off each other. Some, you know, and we're pretty small in the scheme of things. Solar system, you know, so you change the orbit. Some may come close, some may not. You know, but taking all that into account, I think the effects would be just using that mathematical model that I'm talking about would make a lot of difference in the way things are going. And it would also explain the tugging of the poles that's been going on in the last 20 years. As it gets closer, it's like, I don't know if it's rejecting our south pole or tugging our north pole, but do remember, if this is coming in on a different orbit, its north and south is going to lay perpendicular to the sun, so it's going to create all kinds of weird magnetic anomalies, because, you know, it's like taking a bunch of magnets that are lined up and at rest on a table, and then taking one backwards to all those under the table and passing it through. You know, there's going to be just a little bit of magnetic force that'll reach through the wood, and it's going to try to reorganize all those magnets as it passes under them, and all those magnets are on there are going to react with each other and create all kinds of weird little anomalies. So, you know, it is, but, you know, I don't know. I'm far from a scientist of that caliber anyway, and never professed to be.
Can I explain all three? I mean, I really, I got this one. All right, the magnetic pole.
Do you know that the sun's currently in a quadrupole? Do you know what that is?
Right. Yes.
Okay, the quadrupole sun, there's actually this thing called the magnetic vent vortex or something like that. You'll have to look it up. I remember most of what I read. Anyway, this tube connects like the north and south pole of the sun to the north and south pole of our planet. And this thing, it varies in size. Whenever you look at the aurora, there's aurora monitors all over the internet. If you look, there's that oval in the middle, and they call it the ovation. Well, anyway, that's the hole. That's where that vortex comes down. The reason why HARP and all those facilities are located at high altitudes is because that's where the magnetic envelope of the Earth comes back to the planet. It's like a big bell shape, and it goes out into space really far at the equator. But near the North and South Pole, they come down to the ground, making them accessible to, frequency modulation. HARP will, amp that thing up with energy, and then it'll fluctuate, and it'll make elf waves. Anyway, I'm getting inside.
If you would
right
like
now,
to make and receive calls anywhere in the United
States. That was weird.
Kingdom.
Wow, 970 called in, and we didn't get to them, and they hung up. They'd like to call it. I'll push you to the front of the list.
Okay, is it real quickly, the earthquakes and the volcanoes being low. Now, that might freak you out, but there's this thing called Jupiter's Dance. Go to jupitersdance.com. Now, what this guy says is whenever the sunspots are high, that volcanic and earthquake activity will be low. And that flies in the face of everything everybody seems to think. So during solar maximums, he tracked that they were historically low, and during solar minimums, they were higher. So as the sun gets angrier till next year, it's going to increase, what it's doing, that they should fall. So it kind of goes exactly opposite of what everybody's expecting. So I'm expecting it to go down for the rest of the year until the end of 2013 when it should start to rise again.
Yeah, and then,
I don't know. I don't think so. Yeah. I think it's going to go up. Because if this thing is actually coming in and having a magnetic portal or connections and affecting the Earth, it's going to be heating the inner core of the Earth. So I see it actually going up, but it hasn't happened yet. And that makes me think that the 17th to the 26th, I just think it's a psyop. If you guys are getting the same information at the same time, that puts me on edge because it just looks as though they're trying something out. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that that's how I feel about it,
Right. Yeah, I'm personally...
If you look at it logically...
Hello? Wait. You talk. Okay. First of all, we got 970 called back in, wanted to get their word in. So 970, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing? This is Tanius Major. I'm calling from Grand Junction, Colorado. I'd just like to thank you guys for this new program I found. I love all you guys. I mean, what's that crazy guy, hijacker or somebody like that? Man, he's great. He's a pretty interesting character, and I love to see him and that old guy scrap on the internet, about, old versus new. But, I'm calling about, this Planet X or, whatever in the heck they're calling it. And, I've been studying it, for quite some time, ever since I first heard about it, in 1979. And that's when I graduated from high school down over here in Colorado. And, I've been an amateur astronomer, for most of my life and got a big telescope, really haven't had time to use it. But, I'm really fearful for the people on the coast, That's my biggest fear, and the people around the world, too. And, I just wish we had a government that was honest, with us, the people, and, we could learn, how to figure everything out. It's like I'm talking with my mom, she's getting up there and stuff, and, I'm asking her, I'm telling her, I says, God, look what's happened. We had great men that fought World War I and World War II. They built this country. They built all these schools. They created all these government agencies and whatnot, and what happened after the 70s and 80s and 90s? Nothing. There's all this free energy. We're not driving around like the Jetsons or something like that.
Right.
But I'm sorry if I'm rambling on.
No, you're fine. Being an amateur astronomer, I got something to ask you here that I've noticed recently that in the last 7 years, they've actually put a limit on the size of a telescope an average Joe can buy.
You know, I wasn't aware of that. And let me tell you the reason why, because actually I've been, for the past 6 years, I've been working night shift and out in the oil and gas industry out here in western Colorado. So that's the reason why I haven't really gotten back into the hobby of astronomy. And I'm no longer doing that now, but I got to see some incredible fireballs, buddy. Let me tell you, one night me and my buddy, we thought it was the end of the world out there. You know, but, you know.
Yeah, and, I've always wondered why they've started limiting the size of the telescope. There could be two reasons. When you get to a certain,
go ahead.
When you get to a certain size of a telescope, you can begin to see the moon in a lot more detail than we can see with the largest one you can just go out and buy, which I've always kind of wondered what that's all about. You know, what's on the moon they may not want to see. You know, if you can get a telescope big enough to see the actual limb on the moon, what if it's not there? Or if it's there, what if it's there along with other things that they didn't tell us about? Or if you have a big enough mirror and a big enough focal length, what else you might be able to see out there. So I that's just a little bit of trivia I found interesting that they've began to limit the size the average Joe can buy in a telescope. As far as
I wasn't aware of that. I've got an 11-inch Celestron, a C11, and you know, that's, I really got it for photographic reasons because I always potentially wanted to, you know, put a CCD camera on it. But no, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, because You know, really, I've just woken up maybe about 3 years ago, you know, with the 911. You know, I realized what the hell happened there. You know, I bought all into it, you know. Actually, I was the individual, you know, who posted on Alex Jones about the USS Liberty incident, you know, when they first were talking about the false flags
right. That
occurred. And, you know, I've got a photographic memory, and I've always followed history ever since I was a young kid, you know. You know, before computers or before the internet, you know, I used to be a shortwave receiver listener as a child. And the reason was that because my father was overseas in the military and I was always curious what was going on over there. So I was always able to get two different points of view. But, yeah. No, it's fascinating times. And as soon as you want me to shut up, just tell me to go away.
let's see. Let me look here. About 2 minutes left, guys. We can pick some of this up at 1 after Sean David Morton's show. But we do need to start closing this show down. So if you want to go ahead and start on that, Deacon.
Sure. Well, thanks for calling in, everybody. I think it's been a wonderful evening, and I encourage all the different voices. I've learned just as much listening to you guys as I did John Moore, and hopefully John will come back on again. And when I get information, I'll pass it on to you. So we do this every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's called Real Prepper Solutions. We do the geopolitical, some of the astronomy stuff, and, of course, survival and preparation. Thanks to my panel mates. We got Nighthawk here, Ghostwalker, Acid, and all the fine callers. So thank you very much, people, and Deacon John out. And if you guys want to have some closing comments, feel free.